From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Burock, and this is Arizona Spotlight. A recent international report is renewing the debate on global warming and the effect it's having on the environment. Today, a discussion with Jerry Semenyega, owner of Expert Solar Systems in Tucson, and Michael Finkelstein, executive director of the Center for Biological Diversity, about what they're doing to help Southern Arizona go solar. This week, UA Presents announced their 2007-2008 season. We'll talk with executive director Natalie Bonet about some of the exciting acts coming to Tucson. And Luis Garrion reports on one local school capitalizing on children's great ability to learn languages. Those stories and more coming up, but first. This weekend, Citizens for Solar is sponsoring the 25th annual Festival of the Sun, Tucson's Solar Potluck and Renewable Energy Exhibition. It's being held in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of Arizona State Parks. It's also in promotion of solar energy. Jerry Semenyega, owner of Solar Expert Systems in Tucson, is taking part. For nearly three decades, he's helped area homeowners conserve energy by installing solar equipment. Jerry joins me now in our studios to talk about the importance of utilizing solar power. Jerry, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what are some of the benefits of solar power in our region?
The biggest benefit we have right now is, A, we're saving the environment. So my grandchildren and the children of tomorrow will have clean air to breathe and a cleaner environment. Also, the way solar is, we can certainly save somebody some money on their investment. We have anywhere from a 3 to a 15-year payback investing in solar-type projects.
And what are some of those projects?
The most economical project where you have less out-of-pocket costs and you can have a larger return on your investment is solar hot water for your house, as well as solar swimming pool heating is just excellent. Gas heaters take just an awful lot of money as well as polluting the atmosphere. But if you go solar, you can get the same temperatures without the big out-of-pocket cost and a 2 to 3 year return on your investment.
And how popular are these types of projects? Are there many Arizonans coming to you and saying, I really want to revamp my house so that I can utilize the solar energy?
The solar pool heating has certainly come alive in the last few years, where my company is selling and installing over 300 pool systems a year. It's from commercial to residential. People that are going green and thinking are certainly looking at solar pool heating, and the solar companies right now that are here are reliable. Pool companies are finally realizing that, yes, gas heating is expensive, it pollutes the atmosphere, and you can certainly save a lot of money going solar.
Well, you just said going green, and that seems to be this new type of culture, this solar culture.
Going green is anywhere from the envelope around your house where people are building energy-efficient homes to going green, which is the active systems like your solar hot water and solar pool heating. But the envelope on your house, and if people would pay attention to when they're building, they could save 20% of their energy bill before they break ground if they would actually put the house properly on the property for the way it's going to be laid out for it to save energy on the house.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Festival of Sun taking place this weekend at Catalina State Park. What types of exhibits will be on display there this weekend?
A lot of the solar companies, both in Tucson and Phoenix, are going to have displays there. There's going to be over 30 solar ovens where they're going to be cooking anything from chocolate chip cookies to pizza. I think the largest pizza solar cooking oven in Arizona anyway is going to be making pizza, and they're going to be converting the energy into solar for smoothies and so forth, so that people can get a hands-on look at solar cooking, what it does for the environment, and all the other displays will show you the different types of solar applications that are available for houses. Also, there's going to be music. They're going to have a couple of bands. They are going to have entertainment for the children, so we certainly want the children to be brought out and show them what solar does, how it works, and we'll have entertainment for them also.
You've been in the solar business for like 30 years now. How has this this solar energy evolved over the years?
From the old days to the present, products have certainly been improved. People's awareness is much increased tremendously in how they can save money. And the environment is just unbelievable what a little bit of solar can do for the environment that we have. In the old days, there wasn't anybody to show us, few solar guys, what to do, but we certainly have a lot of education now. And there are systems that can actually rate the performance of solar collectors for usage, and that way somebody can have a standard to look at for their performance of the products that they want to buy.
Typically, how much does it cost to go solar?
Well, when you say go solar, there's two types of solar. There is what we call thermal, which is heating hot water and heating swimming pools, anywhere from $3,200, $3,300 up to $5,000 for a home for swimming pools and for hot water. If you're looking at solar electric, it depends on the size of system you buy, anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000, $40,000. But if we look at the incentives that we have from our local electric companies like TEP, TriCo, APS, certainly have a tremendous incentive for people to buy solar products. Also, there's a 30% federal incentive, and that's a bottom line tax credit to go solar, and the state has a 25% state tax credit also, which at a $4,000 investment, you can get as much as almost $2,000 in incentives to go solar for hot water or for pools. And with electric, you're getting as much as $3 a watt or $6,000 on a 2-kilowatt system from TEP, and even more than that from TriCo and APS.
Well, why it seems that people are hesitant to utilize solar power. Why is that? Is it because of the price?
Well, the price is some of it. I think the biggest question I get is, why isn't there more solar in Arizona? I think there's a little bit of skepticism. It's the voodoo that people don't know. If I get a service call, people a lot of times call us for things that what they know about least of all is solar. So they call us for leaking cooler lines, things like that, because people really aren't educated. And we can certainly get some state funding with a state energy office where we can educate people. If I go on a sales call, I don't go out to sell something. I go to educate people, and educated people certainly make wise decisions such as going green or investing in solar, which helps their lifestyle as far as the environment as well as their pocketbook.
Well, since there are tax incentives, our state is giving tax credits for the solar energy. Why aren't they pushing this type of energy more? It doesn't seem like this is something that they're touting, really.
Education, as I said, is 90% of the battle. I know there's a lot of websites available where people can certainly get information, but I think that like California, they really advertise solar a lot more through the state government, where I think that the local governments could certainly offer more education in commercials or classes in what solar can do.
Well, Jerry, thank you very much for being here.
You bet. Thank you for having us.
For years, the Center for Biological Diversity has worked to raise awareness of the disappearance of biological and habitat diversity around the world and the effects of global warming. They, too, are making an effort to promote the use of solar energy by implementing their own solar plan. Michael Finkelstein, Executive Director of the Center for Biological Diversity, joins me now. Michael, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell me a little bit about the center's efforts in promoting solar energy and solar power within our region.
The Center for Biological Diversity is a conservation group, and our mission is to protect endangered species and all the lands they depend on to survive. And our work ranges from the polar bear in Alaska, the recent petition to get it listed as endangered species under global warming, is a petition we wrote and our attorneys wrote. And then we also have work to coral reefs in Okinawa and in the backyard here in Tucson, the pygmy owl. We have about 40,000 members. We use science, advocacy, and the law to get our mission accomplished. And the great thing is Tucson is our home. This is our headquarters. And recently we decided that we need to take this step internally to set the example and go above and beyond what others do and be completely solar, and also with the goal of having plug-in electric hybrid cars and being off the grid, as they say.
And how have you accomplished that? Because I believe now you're 50% solar.
Yeah, how we did it is we actually found an excellent company, Sustainable Technologies. There's others here in Tucson. There's some good choices here. And we just contacted them. They came out, did a roof assessment, and we went 50% because that's the maximum we could put on the roof. And so it was actually fairly easy. And as a nonprofit, we don't pay any taxes. So we had zero tax benefits from this. The energy savings we will get from this will pay for itself, but it'll be over a longer period of time. So it wasn't out of money that was the reason for doing this. It was out of responsibility. Now, for homeowners and for businesses, there are very, very strong incentives. And I think everyone should be checking into this and taking a look. It was very easy for us. And right now, our meter is actually running backwards because it's that perfect time. We're perfect temperature, not too hot. They're more efficient when it's not too hot. And it's very exciting for us.
Well, why do you think this use of solar energy is not very prevalent within our region? Do you think it is just not advertised? It's a matter of not being educated about this type of solar energy.
The number one problem is simply government and needs to step up. I mean, we have been subsidizing the oil industry, so many industries for so long that harm the environment. It's time for us to really crank it up. I mean, take major steps and allowing everybody to get solar, rooftop solar especially, you know, solar that you can have for your own home that allows you to have zero energy bills. And so we need to provide incentives for everybody who currently has a home. For those who are of lower income who may not afford it, we have to take the major step there and offer the incentives or maybe subsidize for those who can't afford it. The primary problem is government has not laid out the challenge and they need to.
Well, why haven't they laid out that challenge, do you think?
I think it's just taking time. I think that we tend to government slow, and that's often why we have to step in on so many issues to protect endangered species. It's one of those things where it's just going to take a real leader. And I think this governor's taken a couple early steps. We need some stronger steps to step in. So to answer your question, I'm not sure. There's a lot of problems the government doesn't address, and that's why nonprofit groups like us exist.
Well, with the population growth really booming here in southern Arizona, do you think that home builders rather should start building homes that do utilize solar power?
Yeah, this one of my great frustrations is I see all these new developments come in Tucson. You see them all over the place. There's one just west of the freeway, southwest of Congress. It's going to be a great, I think it's El Mercado or something like that. And I think it's going to be a great development. Yet, I don't see any solar panels. And there's really no incentive for what the home builders will say is, well, it'll increase the cost of homes and not make them affordable. And that's so short-sighted, because if you're moving into a home and you might have to pay a little bit more for the solar, the payoff might be in 7 years. And if you think about it, if it's doing in mass productive levels where you're talking thousands and thousands of homes, the cost is going to come way down to, it's just going to be the free market's going to determine that.
Well, what do you think it will take for our community to utilize solar energy? What will it take?
Leadership from our government, from our leaders. I mean, from the city council to the Pima County Board of Supervisors, to the governor, legislature, the federal government. I just think it's going to take some real leadership to come in and say, wait a minute, we're done subsidizing building homes way out in the middle of nowhere with taxes for streets and fire and police protection. It's time to step it up with subsidies and pay and help and allow solar be, and we should be 100% solar. This should be the solar state.
Do you think that this is the future? This will happen in the future and we will all be solar powered?
Yes, I actually am very optimistic. I think global warming, the whole issue itself, will be I'm very optimistic in the sense that for the first time in 75 years since FDR was president, we'll have where government is accepted as coming in and helping solve problems. I mean, if you really think about it, since the Great Depression, it has been kind of an attack on government, and that the private sector is the way to do things, and you know, government is evil, and it doesn't help all these scandals that we're hearing about. But I think we're, as a nation, we're going to have to turn to government for some of our answers. And I'm very hopeful that global warming is kind of that mechanism that gets people to have faith. That said, it's going to take leadership. Whoever the next president is going to have to declare, you know, I hate to say war on global warming, but I mean, it's going to take major action.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. When we continue, a report on the Tucson International Language School and UA Presents reveals its 2007-2008 season lineup. This is Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. Bilingual education is often debated in our community. Educators who advocate dual language curriculums often face political barriers. One school here in Tucson, however, embraces bilingual education and is having no trouble finding families who are eager to have their child participate and benefit from being multilingual. Luis Carillon spent some time at the Tucson International Language School and brings us this report.
Currently, the trend is to build fences, the physical barriers of protection. And then we have measures such as the English-only amendment passed in November that are intended to offer a cultural protection from other languages. In spite of this climate of isolation, a new school that advocates the teaching of Spanish and other languages to our young children is gaining support.
We're offering an international program. It's a program that's all around the world. And it's quite common in the U.S. The numbers of schools offering this program in the U.S. are exploding.
Robert Young is the director of the International School of Tucson and is a strong advocate of multilingual curriculums for young children.
One of the key things about the program is that from grade one, students have to study two languages. And so we are starting with the three-year-old group, teaching them the non-English language so that when they get into grade one, they're able to follow a course of study in English and another language. It's what's known as dual language immersion. So the model we follow is 50% in English and 50% in, currently we have French and Spanish. We're opening a German program in January, and we're getting ready to open Arabic and Mandarin Chinese.
Bilingual education has had a controversial history in our region, and many of the policies being forced upon educators now seek to eliminate it altogether. However, many of these efforts work against the studies that suggest the benefits of multilingual education.
There is a part of the brain that's been identified for language use, and the more it's stimulated, of course, the more it develops. The younger the child is exposed to language, the more likely it is that he or she will learn language. There appears to be two main stages. roughly age three to do with the sounds of the languages, and you've probably heard of the arguments for exposing the child in the womb to music, for example. Well, they're very receptive to sounds up to around age three. The other stage appears to be around age seven, which is where they're receptive to learning language and languages. And roughly around age seven, if that part of the brain hasn't been used, the brain will reallocate it to other functions, which is why as people get older, it becomes increasingly difficult for most people to learn other languages. De la maison.
Ça. Bravo. My name is Jennifer Richardson, and I'm a parent of my daughter, who is 4 years old. She's in the Spanish class, and I'm the president of the Parents Association. Well, really what we saw this school as was an opportunity for her to learn a language at an early age, which I think all research indicates is the best time to learn a second language, to have it just integrated into early development, into early education.
For Jennifer, as well as many of the other parents at the International School of Tucson, the value of learning another language at such a young age is very apparent.
There's a fairly wide variety of parents. There's a pretty strong contingency of parents who speak a second language at home and want their children to learn that language. Then there are parents like me that don't have a second language at home and just in kind of for the same reason saw it as an opportunity to integrate a language into early education. And then there are several parents who speak a second language at home and have chosen to enroll their children in a different language. I know there's a few children in the French class who speak Spanish at home, and there's one child in the four-year-old Spanish class who actually speaks Russian at home. And their parents just saw it as a way to get another language integrated into their education.
So, how is it that at a time when our social policies seek to restrict other languages in our community and in our public schools, the International School of Tucson is able to succeed by offering a curriculum that embraces a language other than English?
Well, we are an independent school, so a lot of the dialogue that has been occurring doesn't affect independent schools because people choose their school based on what the school offers. If they don't like it, then they don't go there or they go elsewhere. Public schools are not in a position to make those decisions. Those decisions are made for them. So a lot of the debate and discussions over, for example, making English the official language, are occurring at a political level, not an educational level.
At the political level, our society feels compelled to build walls that isolate us from others. But for the students at the International School of Tucson, the walls are being dismantled and replaced with the cultural bridges of language.
I also just think socially in this world it's important to know other languages and learn about other cultures. And I think that that's another thing the school has done a really good job of, is not only teaching the different languages of various countries, but also integrating into that the cultures that go hand in hand with those languages.
Language is culture. And just by being able to speak a language and read a language, the students have access to the other cultures. But language also reflects ways of thought. By being able to speak it and read it, the students will have access to that and different ways of seeing the world and different ways of describing the human condition that monolingual speakers, if they want to look at it, will be looking at it in translation, in other words, through a filter from somebody else.
For Arizona Spotlight, I'm Luis Carrion.
This week, UA Presents announced its 2007-2008 season. The 42-show season includes legends and emerging innovators in classical, dance, jazz, blues, world music, and program for families. Natalie Bonet is Executive Director of UA Presents. Natalie, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Julie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you have a lot of really great shows coming. You have Dionne Warwick, Itzhak Perlman, Martha Graham Dance Company, St. Petersburg Ballet Theater, performing Giselle, which is my favorite. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for that. Mm-hmm. How do you go about creating a season for UA Presents?
Well, the creation of the next season begins a long way ahead. In fact, right now we're already beginning to look at the 2008-09 season. And we work with booking agents, mostly located in New York and the East Coast. And in September, there's a conference of the Western region presenters, and booking agents come to that conference and we have appointments with them and we see what's touring. And then in January, there's a big national conference in New York City. And that's when most of the final decision making is done. And I work very collaboratively with the staff, and we have our advisory board programming committee, and we also consult University of Arizona faculty to get advice on what to bring in.
Well, what are some of the acts that you're most excited about?
Well, actually, you mentioned quite a few of them. Dionne Warwick's been a great love of mine since I was a young teenager, and of course, Martha Graham Dance. But we have a lot of exciting. The Shaolin Warriors is going to be an exciting performance of 20 Buddhist monks doing kung fu and the martial arts. We have Ben Vereen in a salute to Sammy Davis Jr. We have Herbie Hancock on the jazz series, a real legend of jazz. So just really a lot of great stuff. And in particular, a particular pet project of mine is Imperfect Harmony, an evening of Arab and Jewish music, where we're working with intercultural journeys who use art to bring together communities that may be in conflict and use art as a way to communicate and learn coexistence.
And Wynton Marsalis.
Wynton Marsalis, that's a big absolutely. One. Huge, yeah. Mm-hmm. With the full Lincoln Jazz Orchestra.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the Arts Teach program that you have going, or some of the community and education programs.
Yeah,
that you
the
have
Arts
available.
Teach is new this year, and we're very excited about that. Our Director of Education has worked with the education people in the Tucson Symphony, the Arizona Theatre Company, and the Museum of Art. And we're going to be doing a collaborative summer program for professional developments for teachers to learn how to incorporate arts into their curriculums. And that's going to take place at the beginning of June.
Well, I understand the financial status of UA Presents has really evolved since last year. It's really getting much better. What is that attributed to?
Well, this time last year, we were dealing with major losses on Broadway shows. And without having the Broadway programming with the high risk this year, we're anticipating a successful year. We still have till June 30th. We've got four more shows to go in the season. And we also have some fundraising to do till the end of the season. But right now, things are really projecting to be positive, and we're very excited about that. It will be the first positive year on the books for UA Presents for many, many years.
There's something new this year called Center Stage. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, the Center Stage new series that we have is we've looked at the market, and we had a great response last year to LA Theatre Works and Olympia Dukakis in Rose. So we're expanding on that series. It's a series that celebrates the stage and the screen. We have 100 Years of Hollywood, which is going to be an evening singing Hollywood tunes, which is going to be really fun. We have another LA Theatre Works production. So it's a series that in some ways responds to the market that loves Broadway shows. We actually have a beautiful British Gilbert and Sullivan production of The Mikado. So that's going to be a first in Tucson on the stage here. So we're excited about that one.
And our tickets aren't quite on sale right now for new members.
Right now, our renewing subscribers have until May 20th to renew their subscriptions. So anyone out there listening that hasn't done that yet, go ahead and do that. And then on May 21st, we'll start taking new subscription orders. You only need to purchase four events, and you can pick and choose amongst the different series to become a subscriber. So it's not a big time commitment, and you can exchange those into other events if a conflict comes up in your schedule. And then we'll start the single ticket selling on June 18th.
Well, Natalie and Bonet, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you, Julie.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. Audio archives of Arizona Spotlight programs are available online at KUAZ.org. Podcasts are also available. I'm Julie Burock.